It's interesting how you can use the same words and mean completely different things, and you can't necessarily know how it's all going to play out. So one of the recurring themes in Matthew's Gospel, Mark's Gospel, it's in the other Gospels, but it's mostly in Mark, it's what's called the Messianic Secret. So this would, it starts off in the Gospel of Mark, where a bunch of times demons or people would say, "You're the Messiah," or "You're the Son of God," or Jesus would work a miracle, and he'd tell them to be quiet, and all those people saying, "Jesus, we know who you are," he'd say, "Shut up." He'd tell them to be quiet in rather unceremonial terms. And you kind of wonder, like, what on earth is this guy about? And in Mark's Gospel, then you start thinking that you've figured it out. Like, maybe Jesus just doesn't want people to know. You know, he's trying to hide something. And then every now and again, like when you're doing detective work, when you find one piece of evidence that doesn't fit the rest, it has to give us a certain nuance to what we're investigating. And today's Gospel is one of those weird nuances. So often, Jesus is given messianic titles and he rebuffs them. Then, in today's Gospel, he's called the Son of David, which is about as messianic a title as you could get. And his response is completely different. "What do you want me to do for you?" And it's interesting that it comes immediately after the passage where Jesus says to his disciples that he came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. And of course, it's also really important for us to understand that repeatedly in Mark's Gospel, Jesus reads hearts. He knows thoughts. So it makes him an uncomfortable person to be around, because if we're living in a world filled of lies, etc., he can just look right through us and go, "No," and just walk away. He does that repeatedly, especially when the scribes ask him a phony question, when they're asking about John the Baptist. He asked them about John the Baptist to expose the fact that they're phonies, and because they prove themselves to be politicians and not actual seekers of the Father, seekers of truth, he just walks away and leaves them alone. So today, you get similar words coming out of Bartimaeus, but Jesus' response gives an indication of the difference that's going on. And it shows at least that there's a meeting here that doesn't happen very often. And I personally suspect that Jesus is touched because here is somebody who is just entrusting himself to him. No other, like, he's plainly saying, "Yeah, I want to receive my sight." But it has that kind of childlike confidence that makes faith truly work. And that's the kind of childlike confidence that one of the... today's the feast of St. Philip Neri, but to understand Philip Neri, I think it's also important for us to understand St. Thérèse of Lisieux. St. Thérèse, what made her truly special is... she follows in a tradition of people trying to ascend the Mount Carmel, right? So she's named after St. Teresa of Avila, who wrote the story of the Ascent of Mount Carmel. And it's all about spiritual discipline, growing in these various practices that correspond to various seven mansions as you ascend this mountain of holiness. And a lot of it corresponds to, you know, different types of fasting, different types of prayer, certain other developments. And then also she doesn't rely on these practices as much as people suppose, but she does codify it as almost like a scientific program, because she's writing her book for spiritual directors so that they can notice when somebody's, you know, growing in the spiritual life. Saint Thérèse of Lisieux just kind of goes, "That's all too complicated. Rather than climbing the mountain, I'm going to find the elevator," she says. By opening up her heart and her hands to Christ, her hope is that he will just, rather than her going through the drudgery of climbing the mountain, God will just take her. She also says, you know, there's lots of victims for God's justice, but where are the victims for his mercy? And when she means victim, she doesn't mean, you know, like beaten down. What she means is those people who make mercy visible. How few there are. These people that desire to show God's mercy more than any of his other attributes. And when you listen sometimes to Christians talk, you can understand her frustration. Because when we, even when we do our fasting and our spiritual practices, how often are we concerned at pleasing God rather than just letting him take us as we are? Right? Jesus desires to bring us to the Father's house. He wants our participation, but by no means does he need it. If we are open for any level of growth, he will just take us and launch us up, which is why sometimes saints can just launch into spiritual depths and insights that kind of sometimes leave the rest of us in the dust, and we wonder why it's so easy for them. And it's because we choose a hard lesson to do, we choose hard methods to do, learn an easy lesson. Become like a child. The second saint, now this is today's saint, his name is Saint Philip Neri. And it's important to understand the Teresian method before I discuss what's going to happen with Saint Philip Neri. Saint Philip Neri lived in the 16th century in the city of Rome. And Rome, as it often was throughout the late Middle Ages and early Middle Ages and Renaissance, etc., wasn't exactly a bastion of Christian purity. It was not exactly a beautiful place where churches were filled. At this point, it was basically a wreck, a total wreck. And Philip Neri, he eventually decides, with his confessor's support, he decides to become a priest. And at that time, clerical structures were really quite loose. In fact, there's a whole practice that was the church tried to get rid of in the Council of Trent. It took a long time to actually get rid of, called absolute ordinations, where a bishop would just get some money from a guy, ordain him a priest, and just send him on his merry way. That he would have no actual connection with the bishop, no actual connection with the church. In fact, so the structure that we have in our modern Catholic life is a result of several centuries of purification and difficulty. So St. Philip Neri starts his mission in proclaiming the gospel anew to the people of Rome. And one of the ways in which he proved himself was as a confessor of spiritual insight and wisdom, but he also gained a certain amount of fame because of the weird penances he would give. And some of them would involve, you know, carrying a big bag of feathers through the street and not being able to explain why. All of these, he would give these people ridiculously strange penances. And they were wondering, what on earth is with this guy? And eventually he was telling them that it's their pride that it's their major problem. And looking stupid is good for them. Because very often what prevents us from actually growing in spiritual insight and in joy is what I kind of hinted at yesterday. We don't want to clean the toilets. We should want to clean the toilets, but very rarely do we actually desire to do it. So smashing the sense of self-sufficiency, the sense of self-pride, is exactly what he was going after. But the way in which he did it was not through the rigorous asceticism of public humiliation. He did it through cheerfulness, but unconscious cheerfulness. This is really important. This is why St. Therese had to go first. Because there's a type of cheerfulness that is just kind of fake and a little annoying. My favorite example are personal trainers, generally speaking. When you go to a gym, and one of the reasons I'm happy I don't go to gyms anymore, is when you go in there, they listen to really loud music, they're excessively positive, they're moving around like this, and they're talking in just nonsense, and then after a while, you're just like, God, dude, shut up! You know, like, they're too happy, and it's annoying. Philip Neri was not that kind of guy. He had this unassuming joy to him. It was just kind of, it just came off him naturally. And this is not something we can artificially reproduce. It has to come from an open and a humble heart. So you need Saint Therese first. You need to have this open joy to be able to realize that God just wants to take us. And then all of the posturing falls off. And then we're relaxed. And then we're free to be open. We're free to be joyful. And that is what makes us effective apostles. If you really want to, like, it's important sometimes to see bad movies and to see bad descriptions of Christians, because it gives you a glimpse as to what the outside world perceives us to be. Very often, if you watch movies about religious people, which are really universally bad, but generally, religious people are self-righteous goofballs who know very little about the world, who speak very, very loudly and ostentatiously about the spiritual insights that they have, but they knowingly live in a spiritual bubble of self-satisfaction. Right? It's generally the image. But when people come across somebody like St. Philip, they can't keep that facade for much longer. And they have to start asking themselves, this guy is more cheerful than I am. He has less money than I do. He's friendlier than I am. He seems to have more friends than I do, which is really funny. No, he doesn't have a harem of women. In fact, a harem of women tried to get St. Philip, and he rebuffed them. There's a whole series of different things, and then the world just starts to go like, what on earth is going on with this person? Then the next stage is not they don't like you. They hate you more. And they start looking for a reason, like that hidden reason. He must have the harem in secret. He must have the money in secret. He must be able to be kind of like scheming and conniving people. Which is why it's important that we reread St. Peter. St. Peter warns us that people are going to misjudge you and hate you and call you all sorts of horrible names, and they will be falsely making these proclamations about you. Don't defend yourself. You don't need to. If you're living a pure life, eventually the truth comes out. And then they will know. And then they will glorify God on your account. Peter gives us a really interesting image. The way you win over the ungodly is not by waving your finger at them, through endurance. Joyful endurance. St. Philip did the impossible. He made Romans actual Christians. It was an amazing thing. He did it not through moralizing, but through a cheerful example. And that is what makes us understand the beating heart of Christ. So now to go all the way back from all these crazy images I'm throwing here, there, and everywhere, let's go back to Bartimaeus. He can see again. He could see something about Jesus that nobody else could see, but he had to go through a period of blindness to make it more visible to the rest of us. We need to accept our blindness. We need to accept the fact that we need help. Because the more we accept our frailty, the more we accept our flaws, the more we accept how foolish and stupid we happen to be, and yet confidently again lay our arms out like this, unafraid of judgment, because we know we have a God of mercy behind our backs. And that even the people in front of us may condemn us, and sometimes they may condemn us rightly because we ain't perfect. The tribunal of God will always find the good. For if it's God's desire to give mercy, then let's live as if we believe it.